A pandemic, water shortages, labour shortages, the cost of finance, China's slow recovery, climate change. It feels like the agricultural sector has been facing stronger headwinds than normal over the last few years. Hurricane, more like. So, what's the future like and how important is it to Australia's future? Let's go bush and find out.
The Morning Call from NAB with Phil Dobby.
The weekend edition.
So a few farming facts to start with. Agriculture, according to the Department of Agriculture, Fisheries and Forestry, accounts for 55% of Australian land use, 74% of our water consumption, almost 14% of all goods and services exported, 2.7% of value-added GDP and 2.2% of employment. But I would imagine it is tough work, and the Aussie climate can be challenging, and it's becoming more so, and that must be putting pressure on the business case for many of Australia's farmers. So let's look at those challenges. Leah Jugovic is an Associate Director Economics at NAB in Melbourne with a focus on agribusiness, and Lachlan Marshall is the Managing Director of Yurunga Farms Partnership in the Riverina. He's out towards Deniliquin in southern New South Wales. Lachlan, let's start with you. Just wow us with some facts about the size of your operation, because look, I'm a city boy, like a lot of our listeners probably. I have no idea. So tell us about your operation.
Yeah, thanks. We're a family operation. My brother Adam, his wife Meg, myself, and my wife Genevieve. We are a staff of 35. We milk 950 cows at the moment, three times a day. We farm 2,500 acres to feed those cows with forage and silage, and raise young stock, and produce a little bit over 12 million litres of A2 milk for A2 Corp.
And it's hot. I mean, it's you know, you are well inland. You are dealing with extreme temperatures.
Yeah, it's a very arid climate here where we are, very dry, low humidity. Our summers here are very dry. It's an irrigation district. That's why the irrigation is so important to us. It's to be able to produce, you know, whether it's food, fibre, forage in those drier times. And you know, when droughts are happening in other parts of Australia, our region produces that food and forage to be able to feed other animals and stock in other regions. Through irrigation.
So, Leigh, I mean, there are challenges, aren't there? Obviously, that, I mean, more so now than ever, because we've just been through COVID. China hasn't fully recovered yet. What are the economic challenges that the sector is facing as you see it?
Yeah, cool. So I think overall what we're seeing at the moment is high global production. So a lot of supply coming on for a lot of agricultural commodities, and this is outpacing demand a little bit with softer economic conditions out there. So we're seeing this in particular for global grains, things like wheat, for instance, but also for beef. I guess the other two challenges, economically speaking, at the moment are supply chains. So that's kind of been thrown at the global economy again. And also the slowdown in China more broadly, since it's our largest export market for agricultural goods.
And for you, Lachlan, I mean, where is your market? Is it largely the export markets, or are you servicing the domestic markets? What are the economic challenges you're facing?
Yeah, my milk going into A2 Corp is predominantly the domestic market, but a big part of their business is that Asian market, particularly baby formula, some long life products that they're looking to venture into. It is a very, very important part of their business, and therefore my business.
And if globally we are seeing demand is being outstripped by supply at the moment, does that mean you're feeling the squeeze? Are you feeling price pressures?
The dairy industry is its own little interesting microcosm. We've probably been through over a decade of very, very low prices, very close to fossil production, which has put a very big squeeze on the dairy industry. Tie into that drought, labour issues surrounding COVID, escalating costs of production that came with, you know, supply and demand around goods and services has really put a lot of pressure on the dairy industry, and it's contracted quite a lot in the last few years. But what we've seen happen probably the last 2 years in particular is a little bit of easing with those price pressures in the supermarket. We've sort of seen milk move a few cents a litre, and that's flowed through the supply chain. The farm gate milk price has lifted, which has been a huge relief for those who are still remained in the industry, because, you know, it has allowed that that cost of production to be realised. And, you know, for our business, it's brought a little bit of stability. So while there is a lot of pressure at the moment, as Leah said, in that beef and grains in particular side of the agricultural industry, the dairy industry at the moment is positioned to probably stabilise a little bit at this point in time, which is great.
Which is great, yeah, absolutely great news. So, Leo, is that a bit of a trend then? Has COVID actually been perhaps, strangely good in some ways, if it's helping the farming sector to actually attract higher margins in some cases?
Yeah, a little bit. I think this has also been helped by some improvements in production since COVID to agricultural production. The three-year drought broke in 2020 and agriculture had a really big 3 years after 2020. We saw record production. And even though we had the dry conditions this past year, so we had the El Nino event and that was compounded by a positive Indian Ocean Dipole event. So pretty dry conditions across most of the country. We're still expecting to see quite high production values for 2022-2023.
So what, through more mechanization are you talking about? How is that improvement happening?
It's come down from previously in the past couple of years, but a lot of the improvement, I think some is mechanization in the horticulture space, for example. So over the pandemic, horticultural farms struggled to get workers because that's quite seasonal labor. And so a lot of farms had to improve labor productivity. A lot of farms were changing the times at which they were harvesting, if they could. And some were adopting higher technologies, so things like driverless tractors.
Yeah. So Lachlan, are you engaged in a lot of that? How has your operation changed over the last few years?
Yeah, we're definitely looking towards technology in a big, big way. And the efficiencies that are gained through technology. And the big one for us is data to make decisions that comes with technology. I think that's helped us be incredibly efficient in the decisions that we do make, because we're making those decisions now on hard information rather than what may be a little bit anecdotal or a little bit of the old school gut feel.
Right. I'm sure you've still got to have some of that, but what sort of data are we talking about?
Yeah, for instance, one of the things probably the last sort of 6-7 years for us that we've implemented that has made a big change in our management, our cows now all wear a collar that measures their rumination, so how much the cow is chewing her cud and ruminating on her feed, which is how cows digest. It measures her temperature, body temperature, and it also measures her motion or locomotion, how much she moves around. From those data sets, we can feed back through a computer system to tell us different things. It can tell us if the cow's in estrus and she needs to be bred. It's time to breed that cow. So you're breeding a cow on time and accurately. She's telling you she's ready to be bred. Other likewise, the information may tell you that she's not well, that she's not ruminating as much and she's not moving as much and her temperature may be elevated. So the computer system will draft that cow out for us and alert that she has it on the health index so that we can intervene early with that animal and support her with more therapeutic treatments, like a version of Panadol for cows, instead of having a cow become systemically ill and having to treat with antibiotics and remove her from the herd to quarantine her milk while she's on a withhold. So, there's some instances of what technology can do. All the way up to these days is automated milking, where cows are milked by robots.
Right. So, yeah, so what you were talking about there sounds like a Fitbit for cows. There's a market opportunity. So what about climate then? So, it's always been hot there, but obviously we've been through El Nino. But climate change is becoming a more significant factor, isn't it? So how is that changing the operation? Are you becoming less productive because of climate?
We are having to manage more variables because of climate. We were quite fortunate. I wouldn't have said we went through an El Nino this summer. We had a lot of rainfall during our January period. We're having a more normal dry period right now. And hopefully moving into a wetter break, moving into our autumn period. Some of the long-range forecasts are predicting moving into a La Nina again. Weather is one of those things for us that we manage by taking in information from multiple places rather than one place. And we do that to be able to weigh up risk, to look for trends and look for patterns and use that information to make good decisions. Rather than just go to one source of truth. We've had to learn to do those things to manage that risk. And, our business model's changed dramatically in the last 10 years. We, We make a lot of silage now, which is harvesting crops and feed, storing that to feed back to the cows at later dates, later times. It's like making a preserve type thing. And that's allowed us to manage variability within the weather patterns.
But what about generally for the sector, Leah? How significant is climate change? How much is it changing the potential for this sector for Australia?
Yeah, I mean, over the longer term, it's pretty difficult to say what the long run impacts on Australian agriculture will be of the increasing climate variability that we've been observing. ABARES, so the Bureau of Agricultural and Resource Economics, did some interesting modeling to suggest that changes in climate variability and seasonal conditions over the past 20 years relative to 1950 to 2000 probably reduced average annual broadacre farm profits by nearly 25%.
Wow.
What can we say going forward? Because climate variability is increasing. And to some of Lachlan's points, if we have technological innovation, to what extent could productivity gains offset climate impacts? And, you know, what about us relative to the rest of the world? Will we be more affected by climate change? And how will that affect the competitiveness of our agricultural sector, you know, more broadly? It's difficult to say. There's a lot of moving parts.
And how do you future-proof your business, Lachlan? I mean, is it the case that you've just got to grow to stay ahead, or are you happy staying where you are? I mean, what's the future look like for your business?
We'd like to grow to stay ahead. Of course, you know, rising costs and fixed costs, you know, we've got to be able to stay ahead of them. So we've got to be more productive. So it's a number of tools, a number of levers that we're looking to pull. It's being more efficient with the resources we have and looking to use technology as one instance, but looking to evolve our practices and techniques to be more efficient all the time. It's about using, you know, our breeding and things with our animals to be able to breed more productive animals that have greater longevity and sustainability. We've got to be cognizant of carbon and our carbon footprint. That's something that's really coming down the line that we have to be in front of and work very hard to be ahead of. And we use DNA testing system with our animals so that we can actually look at the carbon, future carbon production of that animal for its lifetime. That's very early technology that needs a bit of time to ground, but we are in that space to try and be ahead of the curve. So there are a number of factors there and levers, and growing is one of them. You know, we do need to have a business that continues to evolve and grow and be able to offset fixed costs.
And Leah, the workforce generally for this sector, is there enough? I mean, obviously there was a lot of disruption with immigration during COVID, but are there longer term structural issues that we face?
Yeah, there are definitely challenges with growing the labour force for agriculture. So employment in agriculture has declined a little bit recently. So from around 325,000 people in August of 2000 to about 260,000 in August of last year. And that's a little bit below the 10-year average. And the share of people employed in agriculture as part of the total work, relative to the total workforce, has also gone down. While horticulture kind of goes through these seasonal peaks and troughs, depending on picking and such, it's a little bit different with broadacre farms, so sheep, beef, cropping, mixed farms. These farms tend to have pretty stable labour year to year, and they rely mostly on high-skilled workers. So about 40% of employees on these farms will be high-skilled, about a quarter will be management, and 15% or so operating machinery. And what I've heard is there's a little bit of a difficulty with the pipeline of workers, so to speak, so attracting some younger people into agriculture. I think the median age of people employed in agriculture is around 50 compared to the total workforce, it's about 40. And younger people are also underrepresented in agriculture. So under the age of 34, you have about 25% of the agricultural workforce, whereas in the total workforce, that's more like 37%.
So are you facing these problems, Lachlan? I mean, you obviously, it's a family business, but you said how many people did you have working, and is that a fairly stable number, and where are these people coming from?
Yeah, 35 people on staff at the moment from all over the world. We have a high contingent of local people that are part of our team, but we also have people under the Pacific Labour Scheme from Solomon Islands and Tonga. We have a number of backpackers, people travelling the world and doing their requirements for their second year visas, as well as skilled labour that we look to bring in from the Philippines and other places around the world. Labour attraction and retention in the dairy industry is a real challenge. COVID was a nightmare, nothing short of. My poor daughter went to school in Victoria, and the one benefit of school lockdowns was she was home to help milk cows for 9 months of the year. That was a very, very tough time, and I really don't want to ever have to go back to how hard we had to all work to get the job done during that period. So lessons we learned there is about being proactive in the labour space. It's about trying to find different pipelines where we can find people that, if they're not in Australia, there are people with skills around the world that are looking for opportunities. So it's about upskilling ourselves as business operators to be able to find, attract and retain those sorts of people and give them opportunities. The other part of the dairy industry, as I mentioned earlier, is technology and looking towards automation and automated milking systems will be a big part of the dairy industry's future.
So is that mechanisation, is that what's going to help you scale up, or do you need more land to scale up? I mean, how do you go from where you are now to a higher revenue, higher turnover outfit?
It's a little bit all of the above. You can't milk more cows without being able to grow the feed to sustain them. I don't be in a business model where I'm exposing myself too heavily to the feed market and the variability that's in that market. So we like to grow our forage base. So there's land expansion as part of that. Again, efficiencies with how we irrigate and grow forage and double crop, and the types of crops we grow will also allow us to get more with what we have, use our water more efficiently and effectively to be able to grow those crops. But labour and the capital that's involved in dairies and the facilities to house and manage those cows will be all part of our growth plan.
I imagine, we haven't talked about water. I imagine where you are, that is a significant issue, isn't it?
Water is the be-all and end-all. The old adage of whiskey's for drinking and water's for fighting. it's a really rough space. There's been a lot of legislation come down. There's been a lot of buybacks and things that have really hurt this district. We've seen the dairy industry, move from about 90 farms when we moved here in 2006, and I think we're down to 20-odd now. And a lot of that has been around buybacks of water and the cost of accessing that water and growing feed. So it is a real hot topic. We have to find a way to be able to find solutions to deliver the basin plan and to be able to meet those environmental targets. That's very important for all of us. Nobody wants to see environmental suffering or damage done, but we also need to be able to sustain what is a multi-billion dollar sector in agriculture that supplies a lot of staples into our food markets.
Well, it's been a fascinating insight. Before we go, lay out, where are we seeing this sector going? Is it an area of continued growth potential for Australia? Because obviously our geographic position, you'd say, in emerging economies, we've got ready markets that we could be supplying to. Or is it becoming too hard? Are we just sort of in a state of managed decline? Where is the industry and what's the upside potential?
I think one of the distinguishing factors about Australian agriculture is that it is so export oriented. So we export 70% of our agricultural production. So about $17 billion of this went to China over 2022-23. But to your point about emerging markets, ASEAN actually made up $19 billion, about 23% of our exports. So combine those two, and that's just under half of our agricultural exports. So to the extent that these markets are going to develop and grow, so do the export opportunities.
Are you seeing the potential for greater growth, Lachlan, or are you just happy to get by and, as you say, you're scaling up to survive? Is that about it, or are you an ambitious man who wants to see substantial growth in your business?
I'd say I'm scaling up to thrive rather than survive. I'm very positive about the opportunities in agriculture. You look at world populations, trends and diets around the world and opportunities in that. Australia is very well placed with our quality and quantity of what we do grow here. We do have an excellent reputation for our agricultural product around the world, and it is in demand. We have challenges around shipping and all of the things that we've discussed, but through adversity comes opportunity. And I really do believe that our sector, with the right investment, with attracting the corporate sector to be able to look at joining agriculture more heavily, investment in those areas, investment in technology, I think there's a very bright future for agriculture.
What could stop that investment is this perception of risk. Is that well-founded, or as we look at scale, does that risk diminish somewhat?
There's risk in everything you do. There's risk in any business. It's about identifying that risk and then mitigating the risk. And that's what, you know, we've been able to build our business on through some very, very challenging times in the dairy industry. It's about understanding the risk and finding ways to mitigate it and find the opportunities around that risk. And it's not easy. You know, agriculture is a challenging sector, but there are the rewards there if you can be able to, you know, take advantage of those opportunities.
And I guess anyone who raises the question about risk, I mean, there's a straightforward answer, isn't there, that the industry has been through so much. It's had everything thrown at it over the last few years. You're still there. That has to be the answer, doesn't it?
We are. And I think the future's bright. I really, really do. You know, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing if I didn't love what I was doing, or I saw an opportunity in it for my family and my staff and the people who are important to us. And I am quite optimistic about, you know, agriculture as a whole, not just the dairy sector, but agriculture as a whole in being able to evolve and find opportunity.
So, Leo, is this a common attitude? Is there a lot of optimism out there across the sector?
I think so. I think there is. I tuned into the ABARES conference in Canberra last week, and I think there was pretty much a tone of optimism around innovation in the sector and this willingness to tackle some sustainability issues, you know, getting some of the regulatory frameworks right. People are invested and care.
Well, it's been great to talk to both of you, and hopefully we'll get a chance to catch up again and see how things are going. Lachlan Lair, thanks for joining us on The Morning Call.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Phil.
I love that. That is the real Australia, isn't it? You know, I worked on the land in my late 20s for about a day, and that was enough for me. I've just become a city wuss ever since. That's it for the Morning Call from NAB for this weekend. Back, of course, on Monday morning with our regular weekday edition of the Morning Call. I'm Phil Dobby for NAB. Thanks for tuning in today. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. See you on Monday.
The Weekend Edition.